Hi, I'm Michelle Blue. I'm a millennial entrepreneur and started a business just 2 weeks after I graduated college.
It's my life and I don't even know.
Okay. Each week, I'm interviewing an entrepreneur, getting a real look at their stories, the lessons, the sacrifices along their journey.
And leadership is hard, and you have to live at home, and entrepreneurship is not easy.
Truly walk by faith and not by sight, and your life being a direct reflection of that belief system.
So, for the fellow entrepreneur, hopeful entrepreneur, or whatever path you decided to take in life, just know that the beauty lies within the journey.
Watching?
The journey.
The journey. All right, I'm going to be watching. All right.
Joe, I promise you, I feel like maybe girl crushing may be the right word. I think I girl crush over you. Because, like, even when I was here in Atlanta and obviously in the entrepreneurial space, people were like, have you met Jewel Ferg? Like, literally everyone was like, have you met her? You should connect with her. Oh, she's amazing. Blah, blah, blah. She's doing this. She's doing that. I'm like, no, I don't know Jewel. I'm still waiting for someone to put me in contact with Jewel. And so one morning we did do a very, like, quick coffee type of situation. I was late, so we probably only had like 10-15 minutes to really be face to face.
Yeah, and I think that was when, like, the prime time when I was going full steam ahead with Heart Pick and everything. So now we can have all the time.
We can actually hang out and be friends. But it was just one of those things. Like, I always followed your story. I always was like, you know, I'm so inspired, so admired you. It's just like a boss, like a woman, black woman in tech who's killing it. And, like, I'm going to forget and probably butcher everything, but Forbes 30 Under 30, founder of Heartpick, like, worked with Google. You've worked with, like, everybody. I feel like you've been on every publication. And I love it. Like, you have really transformed what tech can look like and what it does look like.
Thank you. Yeah. I didn't know, but that's cool.
I know, it's kind of stalkerish of me, but, you know, it happens. Just know you have, like, at least one person who's out here, like, admiring you and everything that you do.
Thank you.
I would love for you to share Heartpick. Like, what is that, and how did you even come up with this idea?
Yes, Heartpick is a company that I founded in 2013. Came up with the idea on 12-12-12. I'll never forget the date. But started the company in 2013, and basically what we did was created technology to recognize replacement parts. Mm-hmm. So I was working in the replacement part industry and saw a big problem where people were having difficulty describing the types of products they wanted to buy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they would say, can I just send a picture? Because I have one of the things I'm looking for, but I don't know what it's called. Right. And we couldn't support that. So I decided that I wanted to create technology that could actually take an image and recognize it and then find it within a database. And so was able to put together a team, you know, raise some capital and build out this technology and integrate the technology into mobile apps and on websites. And eventually we decided to sell the business and sold it in late 2016 to Amazon. So now our technology is in the Amazon mobile app. So that's pretty cool.
You sold your company to the biggest company in the world.
One of them.
One of the biggest companies in the world. At what age? Like, when did you?
I was 27.
27. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. I'm 27 now, and I'm like, I'm not selling anything to anybody.
But maybe.
That is phenomenal. And I'm going to give a special shout out, because I feel like I'm like part Howard alumni now.
Yes.
So I'll give a shout out to Howard, which is where you went to school.
Absolutely.
What did you study, and what do you think, like, what courses or what programs were most influential that, like, directly apply to this technology track?
Yeah, so I went to Howard. I was in the School of Business. Shout out to the School
of Business. Well, you didn't even do tech?
Nope. Which I think is actually a really important part of my story, because most people assume that I'm an engineer.
I just knew.
Yeah, no. So I majored in marketing. And to answer your question about what really stood out as far as my education at Howard that kind of led me on this path, the thing that I think I owe a lot to Howard is the fact that they have so many great companies coming in, allowing students to intern. so I was able to intern at Goldman Sachs after my freshman year, intern at Google after my sophomore year, and that was what really sparked my curiosity in technology.
Right.
So just going, moving out to Silicon Valley for the summer and seeing all that was going on, that made me feel like, oh, I didn't know about this for one, right. And I want to be a part of it.
Right.
And so much so that I ended up graduating early so I could go back out and work for Google full time after my junior year. So
did you finish?
I did.
Okay.
Like, I got my degree. Yes, I just really accelerated. It pretty crunched everything into 3 years.
Okay.
Just because I was very eager.
Or genius. Okay. Eager genius. Yes.
Probably more on the eager side. I was trying to be grown, but yes. I was also just very interested in the industry and just excited about what was happening at that time in Silicon Valley. So this is 2009, 2010. And there's a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. And, I was just interested in wanting to explore. So that's kind of how I ended up in the tech field.
Right. So, Jewel, okay, so you're in Silicon Valley, and you're a woman and a black woman. And like I said, I think that's so badass, you know, and I admire that so much. And I think, again, it's so much bigger than you. But how did you operate in this space, right? How did you navigate conversations? How did you, you know, lead meetings? Like, how did you demand the respect and that you deserved, you know, being a woman in this space, in a predominantly male space?
Yeah, I didn't really know how to at first. I had to find people and models that I could look to and see how they did it. So I really credit people like Stacey Brown Philpott, who at the time was at Google and is now CEO of TaskRabbit. There is a woman named LaFon Davis, who was my recruiter that got me to Google and is now leading at Twilio. A woman named Christy Griffin, she was one of my first mentors. And all of these ladies, they were people that I saw, they moved, how they moved at Google, and I watched kind of how they commanded rooms. And I just looked at them and I was like, okay, that's exactly what I'm going to do. So I really am thankful that there were at least a few people that I could look to and see and say, okay, the way they're moving is what I want to do. I give them all the credit for being early mentors for me.
Right.
And then also just had to kind of find my voice. So I am pretty quiet, shy person. And luckily, you know, my role at Google really forced me to get out of my box. I was in sales, so I had to talk to people all day, every day, which was a challenge for me, but it prepared me for what I would later have to do in terms of fundraising and pitching my business. Mm-hmm. So I think that time was very pivotal for me as far as finding my voice and learning how to present myself.
Mm. I love that you said how to command a room. You know, and find seeking people in those spaces to help guide you through that. And I think that's really important. It's also the importance of having people in that space to even, like, you know, model and have as examples.
Yep.
I think is really key. What were some of the other obstacles that you think you specifically in your, you know, in your position face as being a woman, again, in Silicon Valley and tech?
So it's interesting. I've thought a lot about this more recently, given some of the things that have happened as far as the Me Too movement, and particularly in the tech industry, how there's just a lot of bad things as far as how women are treated, what's expected of women. And I think back to times where there were definitely inappropriate things that were said to me or positions that I was put in. And at the time, I really didn't know what to say or what to do. And I think about all the things that I kind of just shrugged off or laughed off and just like, I can't say anything about this. And I'm really proud of all the people that are now standing up and saying this isn't right.
And be empowered by that.
Exactly. Thinking about when I was 22 years old and out there and not really knowing, is this appropriate? Is this, you know, and having to figure out, okay, no, this is not appropriate, and what can I do about it?
Right.
And now I feel, you know, now at 29 and having had all these experiences, I have a better understanding of where the lines are and where they're supposed to be. And that is power as far as relating and getting through, you know, working in a corporate environment or working with in predominantly male industries.
Right.
But at that time, it was definitely something where I wasn't sure. I was like, right. I know I feel uncomfortable, but I'm not really sure about it. So it's all a learning and growing experience. Right.
But with that, was there ever a point when you were like, I can't do this?
Yeah, there was that point.
Because you started a company. It's not like you've started a company before. Mm-hmm. Like you said, your background wasn't tech. You were business marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, then you're, you know, a black female. There's just so many. It seems like everything was against you, right? Like the odds were against you. What was it? When did you feel like I couldn't do this? And what got you through to be like, yes, I can?
Yeah, I mean, I think I will credit my mom for helping me get through those periods where I was like, I can't do this, because I saw her grow a business when I was young. And she was up against the same exact obstacles as far as being in male-dominated space, being the only black woman, all those things. And I saw her fight her way through it. And at times when I felt like there's too many things stacked up against me, she's the person I would call and be like, I don't think I could do it. And she would tell me, absolutely, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. I raised you to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And so I really think it's important to have somebody in your corner that's just pushing you along and telling you you can when you think you can't.
Yeah.
And I also look, I mean, I believe in God and I'm very faithful, and I pray my way through a lot of these situations as well. So, but at the end of the day, I think that now there's really not too much that I feel like I can't do, regardless of what the scenarios are, or the people in the situations. I've gotten to a point where I believe in myself, and I don't really think there's too much I can't do.
Right.
But that's taking a lot of work.
Right. You have to go through the hardships of that. And was there, like, I guess that one defining moment where, like, that almost breaking point that, like, was like, oh my gosh, but you kept with it, and that was what kind of flourished or brought light to everything?
Yeah. Honestly, I think completing the deal to sell my company was the point where I was like, this is definitely the hardest thing I've ever, ever had to do, both from a tactical kind of negotiation deal perspective and also from the personal, mental, you know, when you're so involved in something and you love it so much, it's really hard to think about letting it be owned by someone else. Mm-hmm. So the mental challenge of getting comfortable with the fact that I started something and I'm going to be selling it to someone else to run with, that was really challenging. So when I made it through that process and, you know, signed and it was done, I felt like, okay, I can do anything, because that was so hard.
Girl, I can, like, cry for you, because I'm like, this is a win for all of us, you know? But it's funny because I was asked this question, and my business is completely different space on a completely different, you know, scale than yours. But someone was like, would you ever sell Benet? I'm like, that's an interesting question. What even brought the idea for you to sell? Like, and why did you go through with it?
Yeah, so I had the idea about exit strategy at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because for my business, I knew it wasn't the type of business that I was going to, like, take public one day, because we were doing a very specific thing, and I felt like it would be well-suited for a larger company to take on. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had the mindset that at some point I would sell it from the start.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I kind of wrote a list of the companies that I would potentially be interested in selling it to.
Was Amazon?
And Amazon was number one on the list. So
we talk about manifesting stuff and writing it down.
I believe in that so much.
You brought that to your life.
Yeah. I believe in it so much because it actually happened. So when Amazon came to the table as far as...
Okay, I'm like going to cry.
Okay.
I'm so emotional. That is so beautiful, Jewel. Okay, people, don't even mind me. I know, I'm crazy.
Oh, no.
But so Amazon was number one on your list.
Yeah, just because from a perspective of, not to say I don't like Amazon, but just from a perspective of, they sell the types of products that we were able to recognize, and they have visual search as a function already. So I felt like it would be a good marriage Yeah, so I had that idea years before they came to the table. And then when they did come, I had to remember that this is, I put it out there that this is what I
wanted. So they
came
to you.
Yes. Yeah. Which was a, I think the best story ever is that I, in 2016, I was getting a little burnout of going and speaking and pitching and all the traveling that I was doing. And I also really, really wanted other people on my team to get recognized for the work that they were doing. So in particular, our CTO, her name is Dr. Nashley Cephas. To me, she is the most brilliant person I've ever encountered. And I felt that she deserved more of the spotlight. And I wanted to help her become more established as a thought leader in the space. So I was researching different conferences and reaching out to them and saying, hey, I'm looking at your website. I noticed that you don't have any women speakers. You don't have any black speakers. And I have an amazing black woman PhD from Georgia Tech who would be very good for your conference.
Yeah.
And one conference, they sent me an email back and they were like, you're absolutely right. We would love to have her. And so they brought her in. She did a talk and it just so happened that Amazon Corporate Development was in the room during her presentation. And they loved it. And they came up to her afterwards and they're like, hey, you know, we really like what you're working on. We'd love to learn more.
Yeah.
And so she came back to the office, handed me a stack of cards. I'm flipping through the cards. And I was like, Amazon, what do they want? And that's kind of how the ball got rolling as far as the conversation. So that was May of 2016. Come October, end of October 2016, the deal is done, sold the company. So it was... It now that I'm talking about it, it was kind of a quick process, but during it, it,
yeah,
felt,
it
like
felt like forever.
Forever. But that's how it happened. It was really not me seeking out the opportunity to sell my business. It was me seeking out an opportunity to elevate somebody on my team.
Right. And I know people can't really see this on camera, but I really was about to cry. I was really about to cry, and I probably still will, but I think... You know, I meet a lot of people and I hear a lot of people telling me about other people, but I think it was something different with you. It's like, it was people not telling me to connect with you, not because obviously you were doing amazing things, like phenomenal things, but like when you give energies and like certain spirits, you know, like people can feel that. And I think that was another reason, just probably the main reason why people are like, you have to connect with Jewel. And so even for you to like, because you were the face of your brand, of your business, Partpick, and you were, I saw you at so many conferences and magazine features, etc. But for you to realize, like, I want to share this with my team. Like, it's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a special person, because a lot of times in entrepreneurship, people only want that glitz and the glamour. They only want the spotlight. They don't want to share it. They don't know how to open that up to other people. And so I think that's so powerful. And that's something you can't teach. You know, you can't teach a genuineness. And even with the work that you're doing now is, yes, in some sense, you have arrived. You know, a black woman in tech who has...
I don't know about that.
I mean, girl, like, what else do you want? Forbes 30 under 30. Like, you have sold your company to Amazon. Like, you could very well just be like, I'm good, but you're still in a place like, I want to bring other people up with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be the anomaly. I don't want to be the only black woman in tech to have this story and to make this history. I want other people to come along with me. And that's the work that you're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, it's so important to me, because the biggest thing is I know what I went through, and I also know that I'm not special. Like, I am special, like a child of God or whatever, but but really as far as my background, it's not extraordinary. It's just I had a good idea. I was pretty fearless in the beginning as far as just jumping out and doing it, but that wasn't because I'm fearless. It's because I really wanted to solve the problem. So, but I think more people can do it, and I know what it takes now. So I feel like it would be really selfish of me to not share it with people.
Yeah.
And I see so many people that are working on things that I think are amazing. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I have to help them get to where they need to be, because my story is good, but it's it could have been better mm-hmm. if I had more support
yeah.
in certain aspects of it. And so I don't ever want someone that I know to fail, and I knew them and I could have helped them. I never want that to be the case. So I'm really focused on making sure that people that I know and, you know, people that I'm introduced to, at least I can tell them the things that I got to get out of my head and get to somebody else so that they can take, not make the same mistake that I made and, or do some of the same things that I did that helped me to get to the place where, mm-hmm. where I am now. So that's like critical for me.
I think, of course, that's, you know, that's the point of all this, is to make it, but to bring people up,
mm-hmm.
bring people up with you, carry as many people as you possibly can once you get there. There's so many like girls who are home, people that may be listening, that may be watching, who are interested in tech but have no clue of where to start,
mm-hmm.
or they are just, they're intimidated. It seems too big. It seems too daunting. What would you say, like, just like very like tangible tools, you know, tips that you could provide someone who's trying to break into this space?
I think the first thing is getting over yourself and getting over the little voice in your head that tells you that you can't, or that you're not smart enough, or that other people have more resources. Like, that's the first hurdle, is getting over that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that people have various backgrounds and they may have had access to information at an earlier age, but really everything that you need to know to become successful in the technology industry is available online, and most of it's free.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, the first thing is getting over that mental hurdle. And then the second thing is deciding that you're going to do it, mm-hmm. because it's really just a decision. It's just people ask me like, oh, how did you get started? And I'm just like, I just decided that I was going to start, and then I did.
Yeah.
So that to me is the biggest thing. I think the skills piece of it, you can learn the skills. Mm-hmm. If you're capable, and you are capable, you can learn what you need to learn, or you can find people that complement your existing skill set and help them, and they will help you fill in the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that you have to become a computer coding genius tomorrow.
Right.
But you can find people. It's, as long as you recognize what you bring to the table and you have something of value to offer, you can find people that will be willing to partner with you.
Right.
So I think that's an important thing to note, too, because when I was first starting out, I thought, well, I can't do this because I don't have a computer science background. I don't know how to build it myself. I thought, I need to learn how to build it myself. I tried to learn how to build it myself and realized, okay, I could spend time doing that, but it's going to take me years to get to the point that I need to be at. So the better use of time would be to understand my value and find people that can partner with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would recommend, is first getting over that mental hurdle and then kind of doing an inventory of the skills you have to offer and where are your holes, and deciding if you can fill those holes in a short time frame or if you can just partner with someone to help
you. Who
has
those strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't change who you are.
Yeah.
Not at this point in our life.
Right.
You know, like, play to your strengths, not your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Oh, Joy. Okay, so the thing is, like, we tried to do this before. And, you know, again, I'm all about, like, when everything works together,
mm-hmm.
right? The universe will place you and us at this sofa at the right time. But when I was shooting The Journey with Blue the first time, I was like, oh, my gosh, I got to have Jewel, got to have Jewel, got to have Jewel. And then we scheduled something, and I was actually in the middle of a conversation, and you had come. And I guess you talked to someone in the front and was like, hey, I'm here for taping. And they were like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, when everyone knows that we're taping. And I missed you. You left. And, of course, I was super bummed. I was like, no, I missed my opportunity with Jewel. But you came back to me. And this was the time we were supposed to talk.
I agree.
This
I agree.
Was the time. It just felt so good.
Yeah.
It felt so right. I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited about your reach and the impact that you'll have with whatever you decide to do. And I'm just overjoyed for what you even stand for. So thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Before I close, I always ask, what is one rap lyric, song lyric, it can be trap, it can be country, true, that motivates you? So we have to ask. Answer that.
Okay, I'm gonna go old school.
Old school.
So my favorite song of all time is called Someday We'll All Be Free by Donny Hathaway. I love this song.
I think we had Donny Hathaway earlier today. That's two Donny Hathaways in a day.
Really?
Interesting.
I thought I was going to be throwing you a curveball with that.
Here we go.
But actually, the whole entire song, I just recommend everyone go and listen to it. It is what I listen to if I'm feeling down. Mm-hmm. It's a reminder that, you know, you can keep going and everything's going to be all right. Yeah. It might be sometime in the future, but Someday We'll All Be Free. That is my favorite song.
Someday We'll All Be Free.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it came from the same song the guy told me earlier. It all sounds the same. It seems like the same gist, like the same spirit.
Okay.
But Someday We'll All Be Free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's just a good reminder because, I mean, not to get into the whole political talk, but I do feel like there's still things that are keeping us from being completely free. So, that is a good reminder for me. Mm-hmm. It gives me hope for the future.
Yeah. And even for like whatever hardship or obstacle that you're mm-hmm. facing now, it doesn't last always.
Yeah.
You know, it's for this moment. And I said earlier, like, count it all joy, because even in those moments, like, it builds you.
Absolutely. It all goes to the good. I think that's so true.
I was even saying with New York, like, last year, New York was the hardest year of my life. Hard. I'm like, I made the biggest mistakes, the biggest failures, like everything in that year. And there was just so much hurt. But I was like, even in that hurt, I knew it was good.
Yeah. It's preparation. It's all like putting on your armor.
Yeah.
Because you'll, at some point down the line, you'll have something that's harder that you'll have to deal with. And you'll be ready because you've faced some obstacle in the past. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you were inspired by this conversation on The Journey with Blue. Join me on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe on YouTube to continue the encouragement. And remember that whatever road you decide to take, the beauty lies within the journey. Until next time, Blue.